All right, folks, welcome back to the Nerd Cantina Show. This week is 4th of July week, and we have multiple hosts on location, on vacation, to bring you the weekly nerd news. I'm Steve, Ken's here, and we have our guest host, Ron, from the Nerd Cantina. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
So we're going to try to bring you the best news that we can while we're all away on vacation with our families and on location. We have three different cities that everyone's broadcasting this week. We're going to go over the Dead Don't Die review, some movie news that is happening this week, a fun scientific game show that we found on Netflix, and continue our doomsday future scenario from AI last week with a little bit of talk about robotics. So hope you guys enjoy it. Apologize for any bumps in the road with our vacationing with family, and hope you enjoy the show.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, folks, welcome to the Nerd Cantina Show, and we're going to get this going the best that we can. Ken is literally in the middle of the desert. Ron is just living in a desert. and I'm back in the Midwest as usual. So we're gonna try to pound through this week for you and bring you the best that we can. Starting with my review of The Dead Don't Die. So it was a little bit of a slow week this week in movie releases. So I went and saw one that released last week. I figured Bill Murray, zombies, how can you go wrong? And in every possible way, they went wrong. it was literally one of the worst movies I've ever seen. You know, Bill Murray has that real dry comedy, and he's known for that those like awkward pauses and like just kind of flat jokes. But this was a new level of Murray. This was like unbelievably dry, unbelievably slow paced, nothing but awkward moments. They break the third wall, but like unthemed, you know, so they just do it at like the most random times. So it's like how Deadpool, it's like a theme where he breaks the third wall and he knows it's a movie. Like there's just a couple of those scenes where that don't fit well. It's got some really great actors in it. I mean, Adam Driver's in it, Danny Glover's in it. You know, Bill Murray, I can't remember the chick's name, but she's the one who plays the head chick in Doctor Strange, the trainer. She's in it. Like, it's got a bunch of actors. It's got a big budget, you know, for like kind of like an independent like movie like that. And I didn't laugh until I got to my car and was standing there with Stu and just had to cry laughing about how bad this movie was. Like, what the fuck did I just do? It went off the rails so much that we would have left the theater multiple times if not for seeing what rail they were going to jump off of next. It was by far the weirdest, dumbest thing I have ever seen in my life. Like, I couldn't. And especially there's, I don't want to give away any spoilers because some people love bad movies. You know what I mean? Like this is that movie that if you're trying to have one of those mystery science theaters at your house, you sit at home. Nice. and you just really just sit with a bunch of buddies, get baked as hell, and just be in awe that this is an actual movie. It was brutal. Brutal at times. Like, and I'm a huge Murray fan. I couldn't believe, you know, and they have those like Marigold Hotel movies where it's like awkward comedy, but it has like an artsy kind of like theme and feel. It felt like they tried to do that with this movie, and it failed horribly. So if you love bad movies, this is definitely like my number one recommendation by far. just go ahead and just bask in just fail. In other movie news to move on, though, because I know you guys want to talk about a few of these things, we'll start with Josh Gad being rumored as the Penguin. Now, I know I was kind of like, all right, I could see that when I heard about it, but Ron, you got a different opinion.
I fucking hate him so much. He's not funny He's not like I don't know why he became famous. I'm concerned with okay. that I missed.
You hold your tongue because this you're talking about Olaf
yeah.
here.
Yeah, this Josh Gad holds a special place in our children's.
This
heart.
Is everybody's favorite snowman.
So all right, to be clear, this isn't Olaf. It's his voice, right? Which was fine and singing and dancing and all that stuff. And I'll go see him on Broadway or whatever. But as Penguin, I mean, this is as bad as like the Batman thing. This is. The movie's going to be a joke before it starts.
I think Gad takes his craft really seriously. I think he does have a good sense of humor, but I think he's maybe looking for a role to have like that dark comedy. And you know, if he can get a good voice out, because I mean, let's be honest, there's nobody's going to beat DeVito. Like you.
Yeah, I mean, what are you comparing it to, right? But I don't know. Just Josh Gad is like the type of guy that like. If you ever like talk to a really hot girl at a party and he just kind of follows her around and goes, that guy's a jerk. Like that's like the guy that just like always nice to the hot girls and somehow gets accepted, but like never goes further than that. He just spends like the next 10 years like being really good friends with the hot girl. He just seems like that annoying guy that like screws you over at the
and
first
cock blocks you at every
just,
turn.
Like, non-stop cock blocking. Yeah. Just, like, that's what he seems like. Also, do you see a bad bone in the kid's body?
See, like, that's what I, you know, you got to give him the opportunity to kind of maybe prove it. You know, like I'm assuming he still had to audition. You know, he's not such a big star where they're just like, hey, buddy, like, come do this role. Like, I'm pretty sure he had to be in a room with four or five people and do a voice.
Yeah, four or five people from D.C.
This is true. This is
four or five people from D.C.
So two of them were blind. One was deaf.
The other guy was on his phone the entire time. It was just like, I'm like, hey, sending out his, like, resume to Marvel the entire fucking time.
They're literally watching a bootleg version of Endgame while doing the audition of Josh Gad.
No, this guy's fine. This guy's fine. He's good. He's fine. Yeah, yeah. He's from something. All right. Yeah, that's fine. He's fat. That's fine.
Yeah, people know his name. Can we put a nose on him?
Yeah.
Can we fit a nose on him? Okay.
So like, no, I have faith in him. I don't know why. Like I'm more gung ho for this than Pattinson. That's for sure.
I mean, isn't everyone? I mean, that's a terrible signing. Oh, I can't. I feel like they're tarnishing the Batman thing, and this is just going the wrong way. You know, even if you bring in an unknown actor, maybe like a Penguin role should be in an unknown actor, so you don't have to compete with that like stigma of like DeVito and someone else that's kind of semi-famous.
That's kind of like how I feel like, yeah, going forward with a lot of these characters, when you have iconic performances, you almost don't want to put that... you don't want to put that weight on another kind of like known actor that is known for a certain genre. But right. But it's also, if he kills it, a great way to show his diversity. So if he comes in and kills it, then he can get any role he wants for the rest of his career just based on the range that he's proven.
I literally hope that, like, your words are literal, that I hope he kills Batman. That's how Pattinson, like, fucking sparkly fucking Batman. I'm rooting for Josh Gad to kill Batman in like the first opening scene. The rest of the movie is just about like Penguin and like him eating like fish and shit. Like, that's all I want. I would watch that movie. I'd pay twice to go see that movie.
No, we talked before. I'm not negative on the whole Robert Pattinson Batman thing, just because who the hell else is it going to be when you're looking at people in their early mid 30s? There is no big name notoriety. There's nobody that's really going to carry it. Robert Pattinson's not a bad pick. He in his 20s he did a sparkly Batman romantic vampire movie, but he still can act. I think he can actually play the rich douche white guy and then put on a mask and be Batman.
He's gonna play
difficult.
The mysterious rich Bruce Wayne, I think, really well. It's how he pulls off the actual Batman in the costume that I'm anxious to see, because
they're gonna throw
a great stunt double in a bat costume, so he's not gonna have to throw one punch if he doesn't want to. But if he talks like this the whole time, and he just tries to phone in a bat voice and call it one, it's gonna be horrible. Same thing with Gad as Penguin. I really think a lot of it's just gonna rely on the voice acting that they do. You know, if Gad comes in all cheery and plays like, you know, not that rah, 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 Penguin, I don't know if it's going to come off.
Yeah, I guess well. the tone. What is the tone of the movie? Is it going to be, because I know DC tries to go like that dark, we shot everything at night.
Yeah, we should, with tinted lenses.
And like I don't know, for some reason I'm just seeing like Josh Gad just walking around the set going, it's too late. I'm an early riser, and like just complaining the entire time, like a young Billy Crystal. Like I don't, you know what I mean? Like upset, like a Larry David walk around the set being shot as Penguin. Like
that you say that, I would have took a Larry David in a fat suit. I would
Larry David. I think the best thing that comes out of this morning. I think this fish is undercooked. What's wrong with this fish?
I'm gonna pretty good.
Pretty kill you.
We'll see. I just hope that they're not trying to make the Penguin like this funny character, like slapstick type character. That's why they cast him, because they're trying to, I don't want DC to try to be too Marvel and try to make every character have their own little funny, even the villains.
Well, my fear was with the success of Shazam that they were going to try to Guardians everything. So how Marvel tried to Guardians a few of their movies after the success of Guardians of the Galaxy. I think now DC might try to Shazam every fucking movie they do from here on out for the next 5 years in hopes of
rah rah cheery.
Yeah, like in that, like that slapstick comedy. And you know, it was great for Shazam. Shazam was a phenomenal movie, and I think they're gonna try to pivot on that success and be like, okay, well let's make a funny Batman movie then, and that's not gonna work at all.
You could
do it with Flash. Like you could take some Flash and throw in some of that Shazam comedy.
Like Flash is like a very young nerdy character that like very like Spider-Man-y, right? So you throw awkward growing up stuff, and he has like learning disability or whatever the hell it was, and like you could throw all that stuff in there, and that could be kind of funny. But a guy like Penguin, if you play him anything other than serious, you know, or Batman for that reason, like nobody wants, you know, we already had that TV series where, you know, the pow and, you know, kaboom when like he punches people. Pretty head like
hey,
that.
Man, if you say one more bad word about the Bat 2C, we're gonna fight next time you're in the city.
I grew up on that. I'm just thinking Josh Gad would not be a great Penguin in that motif, you know?
I mean, those are really the only two renditions that stick in your head about the Penguin. You know what I mean? So you have DeVito's Penguin, and then you have the Adam West version of the Penguin that were both very kind of, you know, similar in ways. You know, DeVito took it a little darker and a little, you know, more realistic kind of version. Yeah. But either way, like I want the long cigarette holder. I want the round glasses. Give me the top hat. Like, give me the Penguin sounds.
Okay. So I was thinking it would be ideal if, like, when you do a reboot, right, you basically take every character and, like, spin something different about them, right, to just kind of, oh, this is different. What if the Penguin didn't, like, how the Joker was in, the Chris Nolan's
Dark Knight.
Yeah, Dark Knight and all that series. Like how, you take a spin on a character to make it maybe a different take on it. So maybe don't, you know, hit it right on the nose with a fat, nerdy kid, you know, being the Penguin. Maybe have him skinny. Maybe, you know, go the opposite way. That's what I would think.
Well, even Ledger took a lot of common Joker tropes and made them his own. Like, he didn't stray. He didn't stray from the original content of the character. You know, he did. He did take it in his own kind of direction with how he portrayed it, but it still was on the lines of previous Jokers.
What about like Bane? How his character was completely rewritten, and all of a sudden,
Bane was shit.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it was shit.
I'm not gay, but I'd sleep with Tom Hardy. So like,
I thought he did an amazing job. We all have a little Hardy envy in us. Okay,
but absolutely. But I thought what they did with the character
was horrible. The character was supposed to be, you know, a skinny, scrawny dude that takes the injections in the spine and becomes a mammoth fucking man. So now they just made it a prisoner. Like, he was just a normal dude. Yeah. He was just a normal swole dude.
He's just a dude who works out. He's got a mask on.
Yeah.
I got punched in the throat.
I got punched in the throat and it's hard for me to breathe. Now I'm Bane. Like, no.
So,
I guess I'm going to break Batman's back and he's just going to rehab himself in prison. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
It shows how bad our prison system is Tom Hardy's character. But I guess that's like the main thing is do you like the fact that it breaks away from the comics and they have this artistic take on a character? Like, they take a Bane and
you have more free range with a character like Bane than you do a Joker or a Penguin. These are the iconic Batman villains. You can't really fuck with the Joker too much. You can't really fuck with the Riddler too much. You can't really fuck with the Penguin too much. You know, Catwoman has a certain, you know, rail system that she has to be on too. These are iconic characters that coincide in the Batman franchise. You know, so like the Banes, the Hushes, the Poison Ivy, maybe even you could have a little play with. But the major three villains, man, you fuck them up. Like, people are going to be pissed. You're naturally just going to piss off. And if they accept that, if they say, look, we're going to go in a different direction, and we just know we're going to piss off 30% of our audience, but fuck them because they're going to give us their money anyways, then that's a personal choice that they make.
Yeah, that's an artistic choice. But how much, I mean, look how much Marvel got away from the original characters, you know, from the comics, like the storylines from the story. I mean, sure, the characters kind of look the same, but they did have a lot of their own storytelling where, you know, even like with the new X-Men, you watch it and be like, well, okay, they're following this storyline, but none of this happened. Like, I had to explain to my girlfriend why I was pissed off after every movie. like, that's not what happened at all. That's not what happened at all.
Oh, this is some bullshit.
Yeah. But if it goes the right way, it works. I just don't know how many times you could retell the same Penguin story and like follow up, you know, something iconic from Tim Burton to, you know, like, hey, let's do a B-team version of it.
I'm interested to see where they go with it. Like, we'll
I mean, you're going to see it anyway.
Yeah, we're all going to go see it.
I mean, like, who are we bullshitting here? Like, yeah, we're going to go see it.
And I know. I'm not sold yet. I'm not sold. Another franchise that they're meddling in, that they're kind of leaking news, is that they're thinking about doing a fourth Matrix movie with Michael B. Jordan, with his meteoric rise, since of Black Panther and Creed and things like that. And I just don't know where they take this story. You know, they're talking about it being a Matrix 4, not a reboot. So they're picking up the, you know, after the third movie. So is there room in that story for a continuation?
I mean, there's always room, right? And maybe Ken, you want to chime in on this?
I mean, yes, there's space to do it, and they really could. I don't know. Maybe the humans just lose, and you end up just rebooting it anyway because all the humans are put back into the machine. And you could figure out a way to do these things.
I mean, there's 100,000 different things they could do with it, right?
Didn't we blow up all the machines?
I mean, you'd never get them all.
Yeah, you think they think that far ahead? Like, well, there's like two machines, and then they, you know, they fucked, and like now there's more machines, so it's fine. It's like Noah's Ark of machinery. But I don't. I thought it was a reboot. I read something that it was a reboot. And now I read that Wachowskis aren't involved at all. So I don't know how far you. This is like a money grab, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm thinking so. I think that they found an actor that's going to pull in a bunch of people to the seats, mm-hmm. and I think that it's been long enough. It's been what 20 years since The Matrix almost now. So I think they're thinking that maybe they can capitalize on some nostalgia. I would be in for a prequel. So give me the dawn of the computer program that they plug the humans into for the first time. You know, yeah, like it's the dawn of the Matrix. Like I'll see that for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe like the actual war, maybe like them fighting each other.
Yeah, like
the
whole- like you know how like Terminator kind of took us down a certain road and then came back, you know, to touch on some things. Like I say, do the same thing. You know, we seen from, you know, a certain point in the Matrix timeline, which would be kind of like the middle of the road to the end. Give us three movies about the guy who came up with the virtual reality Matrix and how all of a sudden we started getting jacks in our heads. You know, the first couple humans that, you know, willingly implanted them into themselves because they wanted to be part of the new VR and. You know,
there'll be no conflict there. It'll just be a matter of the first dude who like really came up with like really good VR porn.
I was just gonna say,
and, everybody just voluntarily walked into a room.
Uber,
and
it was Uber over. Realistic VR porn, and you got a line around the block of dudes ready to get jacked in.
It was over after that to
keep it clean.
So I keep reading that it's a reboot. I don't. You probably have a different source than I do. I would
one
be
article
okay
I seen that said Matrix like a Matrix 4.
Okay, so
I did see the first time I seen it said reboot, and then the second article I seen about it said Matrix 4.
So I think some of these companies, what they do is they'll put out a news source like we're thinking about a reboot, and then just watch the comments because
we said the same thing. They use Twitter as a focus group, and they leak certain information, and they wait for the Twitter to reply, and then they come back and have another meeting a week later and be like, oh fuck, we need to change. Like, we need to change.
Nine out of ten people are like, this is some bullshit. And
but again, that brings us to the point we made last time is. Is Twitter the audience that you want crafting these movies? Because, like, no. Like, every person I see on Twitter is a moron. They're mostly morons. Like, the most vocal of them are you know, they're haters.
Yeah, but they're
all
haters. Those same people are the ones who are going to trash you on Rotten Tomatoes before your release date.
Is that really how we make movies now? Is to just not get shit on Rotten Tomatoes?
It's how we make certain movies. It's not how you make Sundance, right? It's not how you make, but it's how you make mass market money making movies.
Yeah. Well, obviously DC's not worried about any critical acclaim, so So obviously they're like, we're going to make this money anyway. But on the other hand, it's Twitter's mob mentality. If you go off of Twitter, then it's, you know, it's a bunch of dudes that see a guy down and they, you know, even the most peaceful guy will come over and kick him. That's what Twitter is. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's like, where Ned Flanders goes to kick someone in the teeth.
Right? It's like even like the most peaceful, like mom of three that like loves Jesus be like, fuck you, DC, you pieces of shit. You know, like how dare you fucking Josh Gad? You know, it's Twitter is a bunch of guys sitting around
it's
really early in the morning talking about Josh Gad being awful. Yeah.
Well, the last bit of movie stuff that we could talk about is we do have a big event coming out this week in Spider-Man 4, with this being the first Marvel movie, I guess, of Phase 2. Are they calling it? They did Endgame in phases. I'm not sure exactly what they're considering.
This is
now.
the new beginning.
But this is the first post Endgame, taking us into the new Marvel Cinematic Universe. And from what they've released with Mysterio and things like that, is they're going all in on this multiverse time travel, kind of broken time travel shit that they did in Endgame. And
I'm still confused about it.
Well, you should be, because it makes no sense.
Yeah. It makes no fucking sense, right? It seemed like they rewrote it. Like it was kind of like Dark Phoenix, where you could tell they rewrote it like 6 minutes before airtime. And they're like, wait, no, hold on. This doesn't make sense. Let's add this part and this part. So I'm still confused on that part.
Yeah, like me and Ken are in the very slim opinion of that Endgame kind of failed in a lot of aspects. You know, especially when it came with the actual storytelling and the plot of it. There were some great scenes. I mean, no doubt. Captain America picking up a hammer. It's phenomenal.
That was awesome. And like a whole armies. Yeah, everyone coming out of like the woodwork.
They did. So before we anger every Marvel fanboy again, we can put out the disclaimer that they did a lot of things right. It was a C-plus movie, but it did.
C-plus is what you're aiming for. Yeah.
But everybody else gives it A++ just because of
who are these people? I would love. We should have a person like that on the show just so I could pick them apart.
I mean, I have a few friends.
It's the people that went and saw it again last weekend. It's the people went and saw it again last weekend for the 5 minutes of end credits.
We should have found them outside the doors. It'd be like you paid $22 to lay in a recliner and watch five minutes.
Well, we have a writer at the Cantina that actually loves it, and anytime I show any of my disdain to it, he gets quite upset. So I'm trying to figure out a way to get him on, and we'll do a nice me, you, and
he needs like an intervention.
Like, and yeah, I just he loved it. Yeah. He loved every pit, and he recognizes my points on a lot of it, but he's still like, don't care, love it, don't care, like.
And, but it has to make sense for you to like it, right? Like,
the big defense with it now is that, why does it need to make sense? It's a superhero movie. Superhero powers aren't real. Superpowers don't make sense. So why does time travel need to make sense? Well,
make it realistic.
I talked to you about that. I don't know if you watched that Neil deGrasse Tyson Star Talk on Endgame.
I haven't yet.
But he talks about it. He's like he's a scientist, right? And he says, I could shut off my brain. I'm good with them, with anybody making up their own mystical way of getting past science. He's like, just be consistent. And the problem is they're not even consistent with with their own level of, hey, superpowers, like, get over it, they're superpowers. Yeah, but the superpowers have to be somewhat consistent. Like, is Captain Marvel somebody who can fly across interstellar space carrying a spaceship on her back and land it so softly that it doesn't bother a leaf of grass? Or is she incapable of flying across a football field with an Infinity Gauntlet in her hand without tripping? Like, one of the two.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this, and it bothers me, and I feel like if I don't say it, I just don't know a proper way to say it in this, like, Me Too kind of time. Is anyone else pissed off about, like, the fact that in the middle of that giant battle, somehow they're, like, had this women empowerment movement where it's like, I don't know. No boys allowed. This is all going to be a girl thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, again, I'm all for like women being treated equally, and I love that stuff. How fucking realistic was that? Be like, sorry, Thor. No. This is we're doing our own thing right now. Hold up.
We've talked about that.
That's what I said was the whole problem with the movie. Is they sat in a room, an office building, and they were like, all right, we need these scenes. We need a Cap scene picking up the hammer. We need a Smart Hulk scene. We need all the chicks in one scene. We need this scene. We need that scene. And they wrote a bunch of scenes and then pieced it together and weaved in this shitty time travel story in between all these scenes to try to make it flow. And it didn't. It just didn't. And if you're one of those people that clap at the movies, you ate this shit up. You ate it up. You know what I mean? You came, you sat down, you didn't care about how they got you from one scene to the next as long as you got those scenes, because that's what you came for. Me, I want a flowing story. I want a good, I want to be compelled. I want it to actually have a flow to it. And it just had no sensical flow whatsoever.
It was vastly different from Endgame. Like, or
Infinity War.
Infinity War, like Infinity War, and mind you, I'm very logical, but like I walk into that movie going, I'm gonna find some shit, you know, and I'm going to be okay with it, and I'm not going to pick this apart like as it's happening. And I, you know, with Endgame, it was just kind of like a constant where I constantly had to fight this like internal voice in me that said, you know, what the fuck was that? You know what
and,
I mean?
Like, and that's my fear. That's my fear with Spider-Man 4 is they're going to double down on all this shit, right? Because they're, you know, we're all in the minority of critics of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else fucking ate their bowl of shit and loved it. And because of that, do they feel justified in just doubling down in the next Spider-Man movie and bringing in all kinds of people from this multiverse? And because that's the thing is they could really ruin the whole science aspect of all this.
I have faith that they'll go back into storytelling and crafting new stories and not kind of that attention grab. Endgame was its own... was its own beast.
You think it's a one-off? That they had to, you think it was a one-off?
Yeah, I do. I think because the Endgame was such a... it was such a... you know, it was designed to be that ending of the story. It was designed to take some of our favorite characters and some of the actors who have made a 15-year career out of playing these characters and end it there. And they did it with going for the feels. And I don't think the next movies are going to do that. They're not going to go for all the feels on Spider-Man. Yeah, they're going to have their moments. Every movie is going to try to do it, but it's not going to be the central focus. The central focus of Endgame was, how do we get Tony Stark to hug his dad? Go back in time. We can go and get the Tesseract in a whole lot of places.
How
we can go
we
back
get,
to that time
yeah,
so we can
we
hug his dad.
How do we get Peggy back to Captain America?
Exactly. Like it was a bunch of a whiteboard full of a bunch of really sweet moments that would be super cool to see if we saw these actors do this, and we're going to go find a way to do it. Same as with, again, I want to see an A-Force movie. I want to see the all-woman A-Force comic arc on a movie. I think it'd be cool to see. I didn't need you to just jam that into this awkward scene where all of a sudden all of these other superheroes don't exist so that way you could have this, she's got help moment. Well, fuck, that help didn't work because she still didn't make it to the fucking van. Like, she still couldn't get there. Captain Marvel can fly a spaceship, but she can't get through a bunch of aliens to get to a van.
Captain Marvel's having fucking breakfast and like, oh, here, we're having a fucking war. Oh, there's other planets. Yeah, there's other fucking planets. I get there's other planets. I also look at the stars. But hey, guess what? We're fighting the guy that's trying to end those planets. Like, well, I was having brunch with my girlfriends. Like, fuck you, man. Like,
That's what I didn't understand about that line, too, is, you know, there's other planets that didn't have the Avengers. I needed to help them. No, you needed to help the Avengers because with one snap, he killed half the people on that planet
universe.
You were at. Like, wherever you were, that snap affected you. So maybe you should have came and focused on the snap.
It's literally a fireman putting out a fire at a bush instead of the house.
But that was like her line of telling Don Cheadle not to mansplain how she should be a superhero.
She should.
Like, I know. I was, well,
and all the wall.
All getting a haircut, you know, but the other... I mean, what evidence do we have to the contrary that they're going to change anything about from Endgame? The critics loved it. It made, what, $17 trillion? And if you're living in this bubble where you're writing and stuff, be like, hey, I think we really fucked this movie up. Let's see what happens. Oh, cool. It made $2 billion and it got 94% of Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, we did nothing wrong.
Yeah, I know. And that's my fear. That's my fear that they're going to carry that baton into Spider-Man 4, and the next four movies are going to be this convoluted, we need to send a progressive message to the world,
that shit's happening. When I say that, I think that Endgame's the one-off. I think that stuff's still going to happen. They're still going to attempt some of that, but I don't think it's going to be what Endgame was, in the fact that it was poor storytelling that just had objectives to get to. Yeah, there's going to be some things laced in there, but I think I have actually high hopes for Far From Home, that it's actually going to go back to telling an original story in an original way that is captivating in itself. Because that's what all the movies were before. Yeah, they were funny. But they all had this build, and they all had their own story behind it that was worth watching and worth getting into.
Well, this is the first movie in the next section, so it's going to have to create that build. You know, so yeah. So this movie does have a lot of weight on its shoulders, and the fact and that Kevin, it's going to set the next direction of the Marvel universe.
So, like, to Ken's point, I think what you're saying is, like, the one offshoots, right? So if we think about the main line, right, which is the Avengers movies, right? That's, like, that's what all the other movies feed into.
Everyone kind of branches off that, yeah.
Yeah, so the branches were actually pretty good. I mean, if you think about it, like, I really can't think of one. I think Black Widow is going to suck, but, like, the ones that came out already, they're all pretty good. It's just when they forged all of it together, it just seemed like they're like an overpacked suitcase, you know, with just like shit hanging out the sides, and you're like, well, you know, we're just gonna go ahead and go. But the branches were pretty good.
The branches, and that's where I think we're gonna get back to. I do think we're still gonna have a little bit of hangover from Endgame. Kevin Feige even talked about how technically he considers Far From Home the end of the Infinity War
saga.
Infinity Gauntlet saga,
right.
that he considers this one kind of ties up at the loose ends from Endgame and explains where the future of everything's going. So I think, you know, we'll still have a little bit of hangover from it, but I think we're going to start getting a whole brand new stories that are worth just following on their own, and we can get past some of that.
Well, I got tickets for Tuesday night, so I'll see it tomorrow night, and I'm gonna try to hopefully write my review when I get home. Probably won't be I'm going to the 10:30 movie, so I won't get home till like 1 a.m. and I might groggily try to type something out, but next week's show we'll definitely have that review, and we'll be able to argue and hash this shit out then for sure. Speaking of originality, as I was browsing, looking for something to watch on Netflix over the weekend, I pound through these shows pretty good, and I lose content, and I found a game show. So Netflix starting to put game shows on their content, which I'm a game show fan. I'm not gonna lie, I always picture myself on these shows and how I dominate. So this game show I found called Awake, is based in scientific sleep deprivation tests. So the premise of the show is they put like 8 people in a room for 24 hours and you have to stay awake for 24 hours. Now, working at the nightclub, every Friday I would get up at 6 a.m, I'd do my electrical job, and then I'd work at the nightclub at night, and I wouldn't get home till 5 a.m. So I'm very familiar of what it feels like at the end of that day to be up for 24 hours. They put them in a room with $1 million in quarters. It is literally like a kid's swimming pool with quarters in it, all right? And you have 24 hours to count as many quarters as you possibly can. And then you have to tell the judge at the end of that 24 hours how many quarters you think you caught. They bring you all in a room. They eliminate the person who counted the least amount of quarters, so you're out. Then they eliminate the person who is the least accurate. So the difference in the two numbers, you know, like, it is amazing how off some of these people can be. Like, there's a dude.
One guy was off by like 7,000 or something.
Was off by $70,000 because he was an algebra substitute teacher, and he's like, I'm not even gonna count dollars. I'm gonna count quarters, and he just started counting quarters. He's like, and then I'm gonna do, you know, 4x equals dollar amount, because quarters is 4 quarters and a dollar. And he's like, I'm just gonna do it all in my head, not realizing you've been awake for 24 hours. Your head is fucking mush. Yeah. And he came in at like $90,000. They're like, nah, bro, you counted $21,000 worth of quarters. And he was like, oh, shit. You know, like, so after they eliminate the first two, they have 3 rounds of like scientific sleep deprivation contests that you have to do. And they all seem easy. I honest to God, one of them was removing the batteries out of the monkey toy that bangs the tambourines together. You know what I mean? And all they had to do was flip it upside down, take one of those tiny glasses screwdrivers, undo the one screw, and take the batteries out. And the person who could do the most of those in the round won. To see like 7 people, 8, so 6 people, fumble around, and like it was the hardest thing on the planet to undo this tiny little screw. And they give you like fun facts, you know, like So every contest that they do, they tell you what a rested person did. So they do those contests with a person on full rest and then show you how being up for 24 hours affects it. So I like the show for the Nerd Cantina just based on the fact that it's very scientific in its foundation. You know, in its application, it's very childish and you know, game show-ish. But they give you, while these contests are going on, they give you all these stats. Well, sleep deprivation hinders this, it hinders that, and that's why we did this contest. You know, one was screaming as loud as you can. Get the person with the highest decibels won, and they show how being up for 24 hours affects your vocal cords and how it's easier for you to lose your voice and this and that. It's very kind of crazy, you know. And then yeah, at the end, the person who makes it to the end, you could either keep all the money you counted in quarters, or they offer you like a six-figure number if you think your count was within $500. And if you get it within $500, you get the $150,000 or whatever it is. And then if you think you're a really boss, you know, counter, if you get it within $25, you can win $1,000,000. So like it's all based on this crazy science, you know, science tests of where, you know, some kind of concentration camp study where they lock people in a room and keep them up for 24 hours and then make them go, you know, write a dysentery or something. Like it's a very fun show to watch because you can definitely put yourself in that situation and you think, you know, I'm an arrogant son of a bitch, so of course I think I got all them batteries, son. I got all them batteries. I got like a lot of them are carrying stacks of quarters. Like it's all like very easy, like games that you'd have at a family picnic, you know, the egg on the spoon kind of shit, you know. And these people they just fail horribly. Plus they talk to them throughout the entire game show and they're all sleep deprived, so they're all half morons by the time they're on the show. And it's very high quality. Like I don't know, how do you guys think you do on a day's full day awake in a game show?
I've played these games before, and since I've done the sleep deprivation, there's a lot of study that goes into sleep deprivation, the need for sleep, and the fact that there is no such thing as like inoculating yourself to sleep deprivation. You can't train yourself to not need sleep. It's not something your body can actually do. So there's a lot of science that goes behind it.
I did it for
10
years, and it never got easier. It never got easier.
Yeah, and it's
better at it.
If you're a historian at all or whatever else, you follow kind of military history and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of like really bad decisions that are made, and you look at guys in combat, it's a whole point of it is to shock people to continue to attack at night and stuff like that so people can't sleep, because then you're putting people to make decisions where they've maybe had 3 hours of sleep in 5 days or 4 days, and you can hear a lot of stories.
Do you know of any firing range studies, like how far people's shots get off once they're up for... Because a lot of this has to do with hand jittery, like kind of stuff. Like your hands are so unsteady after being awake for 24 hours. That's what a lot of the contests are. So I can imagine, you know, having an AR on your shoulder trying to shoot 100 yards down the field. Like, you ain't hitting shit, son.
Yeah. You guys remember, isn't that how they, like, solved there? Something in the 80s, I think it was Nicaragua, where, like, an embassy was taken over, and they played, like, heavy metal, like, throughout the entire night to, like, keep everyone up, and they surrendered? I might be off on the country.
Well,
but
do that with hostage situations and terrorists.
Yeah, they'll just keep you up, right? Yeah. They'll just keep you up. And I remember there's a line from The Kingdom. If you guys remember The Kingdom, about the Saudi Arabia movie, about terrorist movie. And the guy says, you know, how did you... He was talking to the ex-terrorist, and he's like, how did you turn? He's like, you know, 17 days without sleep will make you agree to anything. So there's a lot of that to it. About the show, I mean... Listen, I've tried to hit on a girl at 7 a.m. at an after-hours party before, and it came out of my mouth. I might have told her like that my dad was like Scrooge McDuck, like trying to tell her that I'm rich. That wasn't it at all. It was a fictional character. Like, I understand the sleep deprivation part of it. I thought it got a little hokey, like with the, you know, drinking the Slurpee, like how much can you drink the Slurpee? I thought it'd be a little more science-y. And at some point I thought, oh man, this is a really good commercial for like a mattress firm, you know, like, just like
what's your sleep number? You know, and
what's your sleep number? I'd be like, I thought it would have been great if they just like dangled like a nice warm room with like a bed in it and be like, you can quit now.
Yeah. Well, I watched one episode
Big Pharma's not stepping out of this. Yeah. This is going to, everybody's going to pop an Ambien at the end of it and they're just going to just disappear.
They had one episode where they couldn't even eliminate the two people in the first round because two people got eliminated in the room before they even got out there. Like one dude had like a 190 over 80 blood pressure because he was just pounding Red Bulls trying to stay awake come quarters.
And like That's my guy right there. Yeah. His
blood pressure was so high through the roof that he's just like, all right, we going? And it's like, nah, bro, you got to go home. Like, you're liable to have a heart attack right on the stage. And another dude just like, yeah, couldn't hack it.
Yeah. You know what they should have used? They should have used a bunch of after-hour DJs.
Well, I mean, honest to God, I used to get up at 6 in the morning to go do my construction job, and then I'd go to Spy Bar at 10 o'clock at night, and I'd work till 4 in the morning, 4:30 in the morning. I wouldn't get home till 5:30, you know, so I know exactly. And then to have to do, you know, anything at that point, you know, I ran a few 5Ks after work, you know, so a lot of 5Ks were like Saturday morning at 7 in the morning.
Why do you hate yourself so much?
Well, I wanted to run these 5 and 10Ks, and they're on the weekends at like 7 a.m. So it's like, okay, do I leave downtown at 5 in the morning and go home and sleep for a half hour just to drive back downtown to do this 5K? Or do I just hang out at the club for a little bit afterwards and go straight to the 5K? So I'd just go straight to the 5K. You know, and it
was
rough.
That's masochism. That's just awful masochism. That's like, I don't know if you kill somebody.
See, I replaced masochism with boss shit because I was just doing straight boss shit. Like
that sounds like just you're just hurting yourself and be like, you don't deserve this. Steve.
You want me on your zombie apocalypse team? That's what I've just proved by that.
That's 100. That's 100%. I mean, that goes without saying.
But if we don't sleep for a day and a half and the horde comes, I'm making it out. You might be zombie food, but I'm gone.
Wait, hold up. No, you'd be the guard. You obviously have shown signs of being a good guard. And I need my 10 hours, man. Like, I don't care, zombies or not. Like, I need my 10 hours. Yeah. Like Steve, 30 more minutes. Be like, they're coming. No, 30 more minutes, Steve.
Hitting the snooze on the zombie alarm.
Just looking for a button on your head. Like, no, dude, I'm going to be cranky. Stop it.
But I love how this show is kind of based in that scientific sleep deprivation. They give you the stats of what a normal person does. So like a normal person that did this challenge got this many, and then this is, so you could see really drastically how much little sleep affects you. And if you are one of those type of people that binge video games, Netflix, and you know, binging, and you stay up and you're not getting the proper rest every night, it kind of does make you aware of like, shit, man, I'm going to work on 4 or 5 hours sleep every night. Like I'm really not as productive as I should be, you know?
I think anyone that's ever like stayed up all night playing video games probably thought, nah, man, I could fucking handle this shit. But then, you know, try explaining to your mom that same day why you fucking stayed up playing video games and now you have to go to school. Like, that was a hell day. Your brain probably told you, no, you're doing fine. But that was a hell day.
What piqued my curiosity also is, so I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy, and they talk about all the time doing like 20-hour surgeries. Like, showing how off these people's functions are.
I don't want that guy.
You want
I don't want that guy.
You don't want your surgeon to tap out after 12 and bring in a new guy. Right. You want that one surgeon doing 23 straight hours on your chest. Like, no, man, bro. Like, this actually scares the shit out of me about the medical community now.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like the fucking nurses are like, I'm on an 18-hour. I'm like, I don't want you anywhere near me with a knee.
like oh, this shift's been so bad. I'm on 20 hours straight. Let me find a vein for this IV. Nah, bitch.
I've never done this before, and I pass out at needles. I'm gonna do it myself because that's less you're about to do.
Like I'm on my third straight 12-hour shift. I need to give you a rectal exam. Like, no.
How about you lay down?
Like, no.
I'll just do your stuff.
Shaky hand, broad. Like, nope. No thanks.
I got it.
So, like, yeah, that's kind of like where my mind went is, like, how many people are out here on no sleep doing all kinds of stuff? Like, when I used to party hard and stay up on a Sunday night or a weeknight and go to work on no sleep, I'm an electrician. So it was like a game of operation. Like if I got shaky hands, I'd get zapped and I'd learn real fucking quick to suck it the fuck up and do better. Because yeah, there were a few mornings where I got a really good jolt to wake my ass up.
To be fair, you probably perform better after the jolt, right? I mean,
honest to God, I don't drink coffee. I don't drink coffee. This was before 5-hour energies and stuff. So I'd get to work at 7 in the morning. I'd undo the first outlet. I'd lick my two fingers. I'd grab both sides of those pins, and I'd take 110 volts at 7:30 in the morning, 8 in the morning, and I'd be good for the day. I'm not a caffeine guy. I'm not like
not a
like, literally no like
no. Back to
well,
that
I mean,
thing,
when you but... when you've been an electrician as long as I have, you know that shock. Like it's not something unexpected. I know what that voltage feels like. I know what it is. So yeah, occasionally when I was really hungover and I knew I needed to get some shit done, I'd take a zap. If it gets a cow in the barn, it'll get me to bend a few sticks of
money. Yeah, from what I remember, just like from those nights that I thought, I'm like, I actually think I drive better after an after hours. And I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. That guy couldn't count $17.
That was the part that always scared me about leaving work, is that I would have a half hour drive on the highway. And my senior year of high school, I had a friend that was a year older than me on the football team. He went away to college. We had a baby in the summer, and he was driving home from college, fell asleep at the wheel, and died on the highway. It's a very real thing, and they actually say with these sleep deprivation studies that driving tired is worse than driving drunk.
Well, and that's why like truck drivers now have like those automatic sensors.
Oh yeah, they have computers in there. They can't drive, I think, longer than 14 hours, 12 hours, something like that.
Yeah, so different companies have different things, but I had a cousin that was a truck driver, and he basically said his truck would shut down after like.
Oh yeah, you got to pull off on the side of the road. It won't let it start. Yeah. Like you got to shut it the fuck down, man. But that was the scariest part about me working downtown, is that I knew I would have that drive, and I've had some scary moments. So I would buy a 5-hour energy every night, and then I wouldn't drink it till like 2 in the morning. So
because then it carries over, right?
It carries over, but then when I get home, I'm not still all jacked up, and I can't go to bed.
Right.
When I
you got to time home. It just right,
exactly. It took a couple weeks of drinking them. Like I drank it too soon. I'm tired of shit, and then I'd wait till like 3 in the morning. I drink it, and then I'm sitting at home at 6 in the morning by myself, watching the news, trying to fall asleep. And then my kids are up at 7, and I'm just pulling all nighter now. It was a rough kind of way to feel it out, but
this could be an offshoot of this game show where they just show up at like an after hours and be like, "We're gonna do some fun stuff."
Yeah.
Like, hey, who wants to win some, some grams? I'd be like, "Here, I need you to drink this Slurpee." He's like, "Put vodka in it."
Yeah. Vodka, more vodka,
more vodka in this.
But no, I thought it was really interesting. I figured our listeners would like it just based on the science aspect of it, because it's not just like it's not a quiz show where it's just who knows the most. It is literally a game show that anybody can do. All these contests are very remedial. You know what I mean? So it's undoing screws, it's carrying stacks of coins, it's balancing acts, it's stuff that literally anybody can do. But then they put you in that sleep deprivation situation. I mean, the whole way you can win $1 million is just, you just have to count quarters.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to count fucking quarters. Like, how good can you fucking count? Like, that's what the whole show is based on. And people epically fail still. Like, epically fail. And you're there.
Lost 7,500 that's nuts. Like, how are you?
The one I watched last night was the closest I ever seen, and the chick was only off by 50 cents.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty impressive. That's, yeah. I saw a few of the episodes, and the first episode is the one that kind of hooked me, and at the same time, it does show like this greed aspect of people. Like the guy, I don't know if you remember the first episode. This guy. Was the guy that was like playing for his son.
Yeah.
And he legitimately got me on board. Like, I was on board with him. Like, I have zero feelings for anyone on TV. Like, if he dies, he dies, you know? but this guy got me, man. He was like really playing for his kid. And I just watched this like greed take over him. Like, he won $17,000. He was off like within the 50,000, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, or with the $500, and then he won $132,000.
And he let it ride.
And you just see him bawling because how happy he is for his kid, Preston. I know it's the guy's kid's name, Jesus. But he makes $132,000, right? Life-changing money. It seemed like it was life-changing money for him because you don't see a billionaire like crying over $132,000. And then he goes, I'm going to let it ride for $1 million. I gave myself a headache because I slapped my forehead so hard, and I'm like, "This is insane. What is wrong?"
For me, it's not greed; it's sheer arrogance. I am the arrogant son of a bitch that's going to say, "All I had to do was count quarters." You're goddamn right. I counted $19,737.25 because that's what I know. Like that is where it lies for me. It has nothing to do with the greed of trying to win. $1 million. It's the fact that in order to get this million, all I had to do was count a pile of quarters, and I'm no fucking dummy. I'm a boss. I counted right. Give me my million.
Like, I don't know if I could do that. If I could really be that accurate with full night of sleep. Like, I don't, like, at some point, the numbers just start blending together.
See, I've already devised a system of counting quarters and then putting quarters on the corner of the table to symbolize the actual number that I'm counting.
Right.
So like, for every $100, you put a stack of quarters in this corner. Right. And then, like, before, like, half hour before you're done, you just end on a round number. You know what I mean? Like, if I got, like, 23,000 even, I'm done counting. As long as I got enough to not be the lowest count, so they eliminate me. Yeah. You know what I mean? You ended a nice round number. You know, again, that's that arrogance in me that thinks I can do anything. And once they put me in that room with all those people counting quarters, and they get that dirty gray hand from counting all the quarters, which is another thing that kind of disgusts me about the show. Yeah. Like, you just...
Give the people gloves. Like, God. Like, it's not hard.
They all look like Silver Surf. They've been jacking off Silver Surfer at the end of it because they just got these big gray palms from counting quarters.
And like, they're like touching their face and stuff. You're just like... Someone get them like a washcloth. My God, this is disgusting.
You could at least put a pile of freshly minted ones in there, not these germs.
Do you remember like Deal or No Deal? It was kind of like Deal or No Deal meets like a shitty version of Survivor to me. Like, and not to shit on the show. I actually don't mind it at all. I think I'm arrogant and just like looking at the general populace and be like, ugh, you fucking idiot. But most of my day is spent like this, like, Jesus Christ. Like, how are you alive? Like, there goes evolution. But, you know, the concept is actually pretty interesting with like showing people the sleep deprivation stuff. And you mentioned, you know, that they show these stats like the Slurpee thing. Like, all you have to do is drink a Slurpee. And they said, oh, you know, most people will drink 35 ounces. These people think they're ballers because they drank 8 ounces. Yeah. You know, it shows you that how, you know, in the little fun facts, it's kind of like, remind me of that VH1 pop-up. Remember?
Yeah, pop-up video.
Yeah. And like, it would pop up and be like, hey, by the way, if you try to drink Slurpee on 24 hours of no sleep, it'll destroy your face. Like, it's not going to feel great. Like, you think a you know, brain freeze is bad. Wait until you are sleep deprived, where like you're hypersensitive to it. So I thought that part was interesting. It's definitely worth a watch. It's not, you know, it's not a bad show by no means. I mean, I could pick it apart, but I could pick apart anything. Oh, yeah. So I thought it was definitely a worthwhile, you know, endeavor. If you've got nothing else to do, it's definitely a good show.
So lastly, I want to talk a little bit about a video shortly that we found online that is a parody video of those Boston Dynamics robots, and maybe talk about robotics a little bit. But me and Ken got into a kind of a rant on AI last week in the future and whether it's going to destroy society or benefit society. He's more optimistic than me.
We're not going to disagree on this.
I'm more of a doomsday AI guy.
How many movies do you have to watch to understand that, like, there's some, I know they're movies, but there's science behind some of this stuff. And like, you don't even need to go as far as movies. Do you remember the story that came out about the artificial AI, but the robot that was, it was in Britain. She was made to look like a woman. She got very famous.
What, Ex Machina?
No. It wasn't a movie. It was a real robot. Oh. It was like, the lady.
Yeah, it was mostly like the head and.
Yeah, it was mostly the head, but it took her 24 hours to realize that humans are a scourge on Earth. Do you remember there was an article that came out, and I'm like, all of them are going to figure this out. If I figured out that humans are the worst thing that happened to Earth, believe me, a artificial machine with intelligence is definitely going to figure it out.
They had that learning AI too that scanned all of Twitter and started tweeting itself, and then within, I want to say, 5 hours, it was just white supremacist, just
white supremacist,
tweets. Yeah, I mean, sexist tweets.
I'm waiting for Watson to fucking be Skynet. How is Watson not Skynet now? You know, you remember that Watson could be the IBM?
Yeah, it was on Jeopardy.
That's Skynet. That's 100% Skynet.
It's on its way. To get to the Boston Dynamics part, you look at, you know, so that's the mind of a computer. Now they're building bodies for these things that, I mean, you look at it some of the way they test these things, they almost look like hate crime videos. You know, they
feel so terrible. Remember, it was Chappie. It's Chappie all over again. Why are you trying to make me fucking cry over a video? Why are you
beating it with a hockey stick, trying to kick it over? But the scary thing is they can't kick it over. They can't, or if they do, it gets right back up. You know, and John Oliver, I watched, you know, the weekly John Oliver show, and last night he did a piece on Amazon warehouses and how ridiculous it is to have to get these boxes that they time these people, so they're like, all right, you just picked up this item, you have 15 seconds to go get the next item, and it's like 3 football fields away, and all these warehouse people are just trying to dip down this hallway to get the pack of Oreos in under 15 fucking seconds
that I fucking ordered because I'm hungover and
I hit the same day buy now button on Amazon for my fucking Oreos. you can see it with the Boston Dynamics and the human labor aspect of these warehouses. They were all out of jobs. It is going to be nothing for these robots to just walk up to a shelf, look at an item, take it, walk it around, and once they mass produce these things, they could have so many of them that they're not paying them salaries. You know, so if you have 1,000 people work in your warehouse and they're not getting to those packages fast enough, you just hire 5,000 robots.
Build robots. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, think about the McDonald's version of it. I mean, it's not like a robot, but when they had that whole minimum wage fight in there, what did the first thing they do? What did the company, what was its first initial reaction? It was, hey, we don't need cashiers. Let's put up computers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's any company, if you start messing with its money, the ethics go out the window. Any company, I don't care which company you talk about. You could talk about PETA, UNICEF, whatever it is, even NGOs, ethics go out the window as soon as monetary, gains come up. And when you start messing with they were talking about replacing all Amazon packages with drones for a while. I think they're still working. technology, and I'm sure they are right now.
See, I mean, I don't even know if, like, the way these Boston Dynamic robots are going, I don't even know if they need drones anymore. Like, I really think we are going to be in a society in the next 20 years, we're going to be in a society where it's almost one for one, human to robot. You know what I mean? Maybe one to one and a quarter. So for every four humans, there's one robot.
Yeah. What's the first thing we'll do is, you know, the human race, the first thing they do is like, hey, I hate getting up, or I hate opening a can of soda. What can we do about this? Let's use our brains. Like, hey, there's homeless people out there. Yeah, fuck them. But like, seriously, who's going to open my can of soda for me? Right. And unless you're the Japanese, that's the only one that's a little bit different, because their first thing is like, not who's going to open my can of soda. It's like, how am I going to fuck this machine? I need to have sex with this machine at some point. And so there, but everyone else is like, hey, make my life easier, where, you know, again, we've been warned, like, if you watch WALL-E, hey, you want to be a 400 non-bone whale sitting in a chair getting served by, you know, a robot, what happens when there's power? Well,
the utopian thought of that is if we have robots doing all these things for us, then we have time for ourselves to be more mindful and start charities or create art
for the robots, right?
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's the utopian kind of like idea of it, is that if we subsidize all the labor in the world, that leaves humans more time to be creative and to do.
Sure. Yeah. I get that part of it. I do get that part of it. I some part of me also thinks that we get away from, excuse me while I'm plugging this in. A part of me thinks that's the wrong kind of trend to just go on. It's the trade school thought, you know, where everyone wants to sit in a corporate office and, you know, not do shit, where we're losing trades because nobody's a plumber, nobody's an electrician anymore, because nobody wants to put their hands on anything.
Oh yeah, I'm a dinosaur. I can't find anybody to hire worth the crap. I can't find anybody that sees value in what I do for a living. And they're going to realize one day that you like plugging your TV in, you like having lights on, you need me, you know, and I'm not that easily replaced with a robot yet. I'm not saying it's impossible, but for the intricate screws that I have to do for like splicing,
experience. I mean, all that stuff, but you know, is that really worth for someone to build a robot for? But you know, I just think there's so many different aspects we could be focusing with robotics. I think
the scary thing is with the robotics, the self-driving cars, the AIs and stuff, is that there's going to be roughly 10 million people out of work in the next 10 years. You know, self-driving trucks, they're talking 3 to 5 million truck drivers out of jobs in the next 5 to 10 years. With companies like Amazon taking stores away alone, you know what I mean? So you have companies like Amazon putting malls out of business. So then once you throw in the AI for the cashiers combined with that, you have, I want to say that's the America's number one job right now, is like retail cashiers.
That's what it's going to be.
That's another 8 million people in this country out of work.
Sales, retail, and service. That's what's going to be.
I did a job for a lawyer the other week. He said that they're developing AI programs that can do the research for these cases faster than they can, you know? So every case, no more paralegals, you know. Me and Ken talked last week about, China did a competition between their top brain surgeons versus an AI that does brain scans. The AI killed the top brain surgeons, just killed
them. Yeah, of course. And of course it would, but at the same time, you know, there's going to be a comfort level there too. Like, do you really want a bartender to be a robot? Do you really want your surgeon to be a robot? You know, there's a personal touch to it that I think that would be a hurdle for it. But as far as, I mean, think about any factory, and I'm guilty of it too. I say it every day to my employees. I go, if I could replace you with a robot, I 100% would. And that's more of a joke, but if I'm actually faced with that reality, I would 100% go with a robot without thinking about the personal aspect and the global aspect of it. I would 100% replace some of my employees with with a robot, you know?
So that's kind of like where my fears of like our country, our the global future and everything. Everyone wants to worry about nuclear war or famine or any of these things. Yeah. I think those things are almost easily fixable when you look at the problem of making human labor obsolete. Just right. And everyone says like, well, if a robot takes this one job, another type of job will appear, and that's how it's always been. You know, when we invented the chainsaw, put a lot of lumberjacks out of business, but now you have, you know, different jobs for them.
People making the chainsaws and selling the chainsaws.
I don't subscribe to that fact nowadays, just based on the massive amount of capabilities of these robots and the AI is that whatever job springs up from them taking that one job, they'll probably be able to do that job too.
Yeah. You know, I don't disagree with that. I was going to say, you know, the counter argument, and I wish I could argue this with you. I usually could find something, but you know, they say, oh, well, you know, you'll need someone to repair these robots. Well, who's better to repair a robot than a fucking robot? like, what are you talking about? We don't make cars anymore. There's robots making the cars. It's only a matter of, like, who's buying this shit? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I don't subscribe to that either. I think other opportunities will open up, sure. But, you know, it comes down to overpopulation. And this is definitely not a topic we should get into, but I have my own views on humanity. But it comes down to the most basic necessity of any human life is a purpose where with a reward, you know, with a job with monetary gains where you could provide. So if you just extract overnight and not gradually, because gradual things do seem to balance out a little bit better in just the course of history. You know, I'm sure the phasing out of cobblers wasn't like written about in Financial Times. But when you all of a sudden, hey, we developed a robot, all of a sudden every Amazon worker's out of a job, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a major problem. You got people there. What are these people going to do? They can't all do, you know, nerd podcasts and, you know, be creative. Like, how many more fucking Instagram models do we fucking need?
But I mean, when technology was scarce, yes, every advancement in technology benefited humanity. But I think we've kind of crested that point, and we're going to hit a point where technology starts to hinder humanity. We've already seen that with smartphones. They're making us dumber. They're making like they're sucking our brains. They're sucking our time. We're not as mindful to what's going on around us. We're not as mindful to our families, to our hobbies. Like
it's bread and circus politics, right? Like back in the Roman times, the first thing they did when they wanted to go to an unpopular war, the first thing they did was they threw games and they gave out free bread, right? So bread and circus. You know, our bread and circus is our iPhones and our FaceTime and all this stuff.
These robots, the first jobs they're going to take are the jobs making 30 to 70 grand a year. You know what I mean? The middle class, right? And who's eating that pile of shit? It's going to be every middle class American that is between the ages of 28 and 50 that aren't going to be able to be retrained in anything, that aren't going to be able to you know, learn how to code. That's the big thing. Learn a code.
Hold on, I've been washing dishes for 30 years, but let me go code now.
Billy Joe Bob, who drives a tractor across the country every you know day, you know, when the robot takes his job, what the fuck is he going to do? He's been making 50 grand a year as either a high school graduate or not even a high school graduate. You know, he was able to have a job to support his family. He's got two kids in Alabama somewhere. You know what I mean? What's going to happen to him and his family when Elon Musk takes his entire industry and makes it obsolete?
Well, Steve, it's obvious he's going to go code. I mean, he's obviously qualified, and he's just missed out.
He can now follow his dreams of being a web designer.
Yeah, he's got nothing else to lose. You know, his one kid died of starvation. The other one he had to foster out. So now he's free to do whatever he wants.
I mean, that's code. In all honesty, like, it is kind of, there is a part of me that says, yeah, it's really cool that we've kind of figured out this robot stuff. You know, like, when you see him, like, You know, I remember having those toy robots as a kid. Did you ever have that? Like, so I'm an '80s kid. Do you ever have that that robot butler? Do you remember that robot? It was in a few movies in the '80s. It just had the tray and it was on, you know, remote control.
We had a live one. So
you dick. So I remember the you know, the days. Then all of a sudden, if you know, you fast forward a decade or two, and the Japanese got robots that can do backflips. It's like, oh, look at this. Look at this little fucker. He can flip. They got a robot doing the robot. Like, oh, look, he's dancing. He's dancing.
You have kids now, right? So you have, I have a couple kids. And when I mean, they've basically replaced a dog with a robot.
True. It's true.
It can do 128 commands. That's, I mean, I have a dog and it sucks because it poops and it does three things and nothing I ask for. You know what I mean? And I'm like, this seems better. So now we're replacing live animals. So there you go. You're like, no, you don't need a live dog. They do things. You don't want that. You want this thing. You could just turn it off. My dog had a button, holy shit, I'd have it on a remote control.
I mean, my envision of the future is this dystopian society where we're all walking around skinny, mindless, with nothing to do, and stray dogs everywhere now.
or the other version, we're sitting just like a bunch of 450-pound fucking drinking like a steak through a milkshake, you know, and doing nothing except watching other people do stuff on TV, you know.
Me and Ken are in the works of trying to for the Cantina Conversations to get some of these guys that work at these labs, you know, and really, really see what, like, the people that are building these things. Because, like, if you're building them, you must have an optimistic vision of where you're going with this. Because, you know, I'm not putting together the gun that I'm going to shoot myself in the head with, you know, like...
We made the atom bomb, so I'm not sure if that theory holds water. If that, like, there was guys in that lab, they're like, this is going to be great, right? Be like, yeah, what are we going
to
use it for?
Nuclear fission. Yeah. Like, bro, we're going to be able to power all these houses with it. And then it's like, no, we're going to blow.
Like, no, you know we're going to.
We're going to blow this, craters into the earth with it. Yeah,
we're going to wipe out entire cities. Be like, well, you know, I'd really like that Nobel Peace Prize, you know? And is it just called Nobel Prize now? No peace? Okay, so. you know, and I don't know if those guys really have a good idea of really what's happening in the real world. If we do have them in a conversation, I would like politely to ask them to just stop fucking beating the robots, please. I've seen these movies. It goes the same way every time.
The first AI that becomes sentient is just going to scan the internet and it's going to find all these videos of humans beating the shit out of robots. And it's like, if it didn't hate us before, it's sure going to push it over the edge. Like, these heartless, soulless bastards.
Like, hey, I saw you guys beating my cousin a little bit earlier. And you know, I'm stronger than all of you, right? Like, and I'm indestructible. You made me indestructible, I think, in order to kill you. Like, what other purpose would it be where, like, you see him, like shooting it, making them out of metal where it's not, you know, bullets don't penetrate it.
Military applications of wars we fought with robots. And I mean, that's the whole thing is, I mean, we just had Trump justify Iran shooting down a drone because it didn't have a pilot. Like we're not going to do nothing about it because there was nobody in it. Are we just going to have world leaders now shoveling shiploads of robots at each other, blowing all kinds of stuff up, and they just do it so nonchalantly because it was a robot, you know, whatever, it was a robot.
Okay, in a way, you could be pro war, anti war, whatever. But as a gamer, just like let's get into just the heart of it. Is there a part of you that's just like, oh man, I'd be really qualified to fight a drone, or like, oh, I'd be really qualified to like fight as a robot, man. Like, you should have seen me.
Oh, for sure. I used to in high school. I used to crack the typewriting. Like, and we had the typewriting class, and I would go into DOS and I'd pull up Flight Simulator.
Wait, typewriting?
Yeah.
Wait, secretary school? What's typewriting?
We had a computer class, and part of it was typing.
Oh, you were just learning to type. I thought you sat on a typewriter. typewriter, and I'm like,
well, I remember using typewriters back in the day to write school reports.
I do too. They had in libraries, but yeah. I don't think anyone's ever used them. I think that would have been a great stash.
But once we got to junior high and high school, that's kind of when the computers got a little more sophisticated. Yeah. And that's when those first flight simulators came out. And I don't know why. Oh my God. These schools had a flight simulator on their hard drives. Like anybody was teaching flight school in seventh grade.
Yeah, they're like, SimCity and Oregon Trail. Those are the three.
You know,
and like, you have three ways to, you're going to grow up. Either you're going to fly planes, you're going to die of dysentery, or you're going to be a city planner. Those are your three options. You know.
Yeah, I do have that arrogance to where, like, you put me in one of those flight simulators, I can drone it out. Yeah. Like, man, I'll put on my Iceman shirt, walk into that room, and fucking.
You know, the funniest thing is I could be on Facebook and be like, yeah, going to war. You know, no, this country didn't do anything to us. Be like, hey, man, do you want to fly one of these drones? Like, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Get out of you guys.
Fuck yeah.
I score, man.
That's kind of like, yeah, what Guardians was. Guardians 2. You know what I mean? That whole golden society, just all flying those spaceships remotely.
Yeah. I thought that was the coolest thing. I'm like, oh my God, I'd be so good at that. I'm like, these guys suck. They obviously have no training. I'm like, I spent years on a PlayStation controller. I'm like, I could kill it with that thing.
See, but I don't know. Like, are they going to give you a controller in the drone controls, or are they going to make you actually use the flight stick, the yaw, and the gauges? Like,
I didn't get that part. Like, how they use so much space for, like, an actual thing. Like you know, they invent controllers now, right? It's super easy. You don't really need a full, like
arcade. No, they want only pilots to do it, so they make it actually like a cockpit, when really, if they want, like, the best of the best to be flying these things, you put a PlayStation controller in there or an Xbox controller, you're gonna get a bunch of dudes,
get a dude that's playing these video games on a 17 inch fucking TV that could you know, pinpoint the detail on, like, a VHS tape, you know, that, like, literally has had a hard time all his life. You give him a big screen.
I'm quite convinced the minute they can have robots, you know, I've seen some people on Call of Duty shoot some sniper shots that will blow your goddamn mind. Yeah. So you give him a PlayStation controller and a robot with a sniper rifle. Yeah. We're ending wars in days. We're ending wars in days.
This is why they're giving us video games. They're raising a nerd army to just make sure we, like, if we ever get attacked, we're like, hey, man, we got a bunch of video games.
But are you really ready for a society where you walk into, you know, your local grocery store and half, you know, a quarter of the customers in there are robots, and you're just walking past robots? I mean, what scares me is they had that hitchhiking robot, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
the Hitchbot. They beat that fool. Like that dude got to Philly. That dude got to Philly, and they shit on that dude. You know,
to be fair, he made it all the way from, what was it? Was it Arizona to Philly?
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't care if you're a robot or, you know, a regular guy or a fucking giraffe, you're going to get your ass beat in Philly. Like, that's just something that happens in Philadelphia for whatever reason. These are the same people that booed Santa Claus. So, like, these people are ruthless. I don't know what's happening in Philly. I've never been.
But I truly believe that when we get to the point where there's a bunch of robots out there, it's going to bring out the worst in human nature. You're going to have people tripping these things. You're going to have little kids, you know, paintballing these fuckers up. Like, it's going to bring the worst of humanity out in us the minute we know. Like, it's gonna be straight Westworld, like legit Westworld at the local grocery store.
Yeah, with, like, the robots being you know, prostitutes. We either want to fuck you or kill you, right? That's, like, our main two things in life. And open a can of soda. I was thinking more like Chappie, where, you know, you convince these robots to do your bidding for you, and most of it's going to be bad. I mean, honestly, anything that comes out in technology-wise is instantly used for bad things. Like, nobody's craftier than drug dealers or drug users. Like, if they only applied themselves. It's, you know, you got a guy that can't, you know, add two and two together, but yet somehow makes a bong out of six different house items. And, like, you know, of course he gets a robot. What's the first thing he's going to do? He's going to try to make it do some criminal shit.
Definitely.
100%. You know, eventually that's going to go down there.
Well, I hope we didn't scare our audience too much again. we have the doomsday. If you're more optimistic about the future, please leave us a voicemail or something in the comments. We're going to try to wrap it up today. We went a little long while we were on vacation. We had Ron on the podcast for the first time. He's done a lot of articles for us on the Nerd Cantina site. You could go check those out. It was fun having him here. Ken had to bow out with his limited connection out in the deserts in his RV. He was broadcasting remotely. Again, this being a holiday week, we wanted to make sure we got our weekly show out for you, but we definitely slacked on production level this week. So any apologies?
Look, there's a right there. Where is it? This is great. Look at your setup and look at mine. I definitely phoned it in.
So any apologies to any frustration in the listening quality this week, but we're glad you came out and stuck with us. With that said, we'll see you again next week, nerds.
Real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today, that you happen to be a podcasting nerd. And if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine. Anyways, I have signed up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code Nerd Cantina.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift card, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. If you're going to be listening to podcasts anyways, you might as well get some free stuff for doing it. So download the PodCoin app, put in the code the Nerd Cantina, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.